Guardian Unlimited.
This is Andras Schiff introducing Beethoven's Piano Sonata No. 7 in D major, Opus 10, No. 3.
Now, Opus 10, No. 3, to me, one of the miracles of music, not just of Beethoven. Alone in Opus 10, it is a four-movement work. It's in the lyrical sunny key of D major. Let's see. Etc. Other pieces in D major, certainly later, Missa Solemnis. But this is, if I said that the first sonata was dramatic and the second was comical, I cannot really find an adjective to the third, because it has many, many faces. It's an enigmatic piece. It has this extraordinary slow movement, largo e mesto, which is expression of the deepest tragedy that has ever been written to me. But the first movement is presto alla breve, so you are counting two in a bar. And silence. So again, this movement starts with an upbeat. So one, two. There is piano, and there is no crescendo in this. Again, it's a variation of a Mannheim rocket. No. And it's unison, and then comes something very polyphonic. Again, the first phrase, almost everything staccato. Second phrase, almost everything legato. Very important in this movement is the monothematic thinking. If you take the first four notes, you can derive almost everything in this sonata from these four notes. You will see later. Already you heard. Always these four notes and the inversion of it. Thank you. dramatic and with the syncopation. Now comes again, four notes. Modulation. Comes the second subject, which is, again, this is important, the notation of this theme, which many pianists play, in my opinion, not right, four equal semiquavers. Usually you hear this theme. This is nonsense, because Beethoven wrote a grace note, a crotchet, and two quavers. Had he wanted four semiquavers, he could have written four semiquavers. So I don't see why anybody would play. But you have to play the grace note melodically on the beat. And with this you show again, again the four notes. Minor, and always the four notes. This is wonderful, this descent. And then while the bass is playing this four-note motif, the upper voices, they play this in inversion. And with a huge crescendo leading up to fortissimo. And the gum. This is what we would expect, but what does he do? Huge surprise. B flat major from A again, sounds almost naked. Again, a Napolitan key related to A. After B flat after A is Napolitan. Scarlatti who first invented this hand crossing, but only before he became too fat, because after that, so I assume that Beethoven in his 20s was still quite slender. He didn't have so much Wiener Schnitzel yet. Otherwise, you can't play these hand crossings. So, this was this very dramatic development section, and then comes the recapitulation, which echoes the exposition in different tonal relationships, and then beautiful coda. Sonority. And where are we now? So in D major, this G major, the subdominant. He always reserves the subdominant for something very special. And in this case, it's for this coda. Four notes. Again, like in a string quartet, you know, four players, four registers, they are repeating the same. He's really using it to the limits, and then huge orchestral crescendo, wonderful sonority. And now comes this extraordinary movement, D minor. Largo e mesto, nothing ordinary about it, no tempo ordinario. And mesto is something that we associate, it comes later in the string quartet, opus 18, number 1 in F major, or let's think of Bartók's sixth string quartet, the final movement. It's something that we associate with death and lamentation. It's really crying over somebody very dear. Write darker than this. I mean, certainly the models of D minor are Mozartian, if we think of Don Giovanni or of the that kind of D minor, but with a new experience of gravity. I don't think there had been gravity in music before like this, because again, the sheer weight of it. It's a slow movement in 6/8 time, and I feel that these six quavers, it has to have a very severe pulse that you must never lose. And later, now comes the lament. clear paragraphs, but you can see that from the second phrase it's rather operatic, and that's when one has to apply tempo rubato. This is when Mozart always complained when he heard Clementi's piano playing. "I don't like Clementi's piano playing," he said, "because his two hands are always together." And Liszt said beautifully about tempo rubato that it is like a tree. The trunk of the tree is solid and it stands there, but the wind is blowing the leaves. So that is what I mean, that a sort of severe pulse has to go through this movement, but the melody must be free. They are almost independent from each other. But today, you know, you play this and then comes a certain great critic and says, "His two hands are not together." So what? I mean, where is it written that two hands have to be always together? I have never read it, but it's somehow certain prejudice. Now comes a new theme. Development section is extraordinary. The atmosphere, to me, this is resurrection. And Schubert clearly knew this movement and loved it. And in the B flat major sonata, you know, in this section. To me, it's the same expression. But so let's go on what happens here. Has to have the pulse, and above this is like sobs. This is unbelievable when this music is not pretty, it's not lovely. It's really It's like a Goya painting, and the... extraordinary. And then the coda, this is an enormous movement, and the coda still increases this grief and this terrible tension. These are the most touching moments to me in Beethoven. How, after such a deep tragedy and a frozen silence, then suddenly life begins, and it is like a ray of hope. It's like a little flower on the side of a grave after this. And therefore, it must come without interruption and without coughing. The sign of a good audience is if nobody coughs here. And it's a beautiful minuetto, dolce, with a sweet expression. It's really neue Kraft fühlen, as he writes später in the A minor string quartet, to feel the new strength, new life. But of course we cannot forget what we heard in the last 10 minutes, so it is really it's through the tears of the previous movement. Then comes something imitative. trio is again humorous. Fine. Then the finale, allegro, so tempo ordinario, starts with a very innocent question. Is it true? Yeah. And comes something like a cadenza. This is a passage that, again, you have to switch off the metronome here. It will never work. So, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. Fermata, and then a tempo. Again, a deceptive cadence by you would expect, but and now affirmative. Now we are at home, and really the tempo starts here. Banal, but deliberately so. He just wants to have a virtuoso passage here. Fermata. So this is a sonata rondo. I'm combining the elements of rondo form and sonata form. And then here comes a very interesting. This is incredible. Before about when Beethoven writes something in unison, it's rhetorical. He modulates chromatically and leaves it halfway up in the air. Wrong key. Again, unisono, remember this. Misterioso. And with this modulation, we are home again. And variation. Then comes the recapitulation, then he reaches the subdominant, and then again a very unusual ending to this sonata. That's why it never has any success, although success is not important, certainly not for Beethoven. And that shows that sometimes the greatest pieces are the most misunderstood ones. because after this I will come to the Pathetic Sonata, which is a very great piece, but I think this is much greater. Beethoven also never understood the popularity of his Moonlight Sonata, and he was always angry, why people don't understand my F-sharp major sonata, that is much greater. Because it doesn't have a nickname. If this sonata... let's give this sonata a nickname and bring it up to the level what it deserves. Again, it's a wonderful, it evaporates into nothingness. And this passage, if it was for nothing else, but this is a miracle.